So we're reading from the first canto, 7th chapter, entitled The Son of Jonah Punished, and it's text 13 and 14. It's the translation by Srila Prabhupada. When the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their deserved destinations, and when the son of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasen, the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, beheaded the five sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master, foolishly thinking that he would be pleased. Duryodhan, however, disapproved of the heinous act and was not pleased at the least.
So the purport by Srila Prabhupada.
Transcendental topics of the activities of Lord Sri Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam begin from the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, where the Lord himself spoke about himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, both the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental topics of Lord Krishna. The Gita is Krishna Katha, or topics of Krishna because it is spoken by the Lord. And the Bhagavatam is also Krishna Katha because it is spoken about the Lord. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to be informed of both Krishna Kathas by his order. Lord Krishna Chaitanya is Krishna himself in the garb of a devotee of Krishna, and therefore the version of both Lord Krishna and Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are identical. Lord Chaitanya desired that all who are born in India seriously understand such Krishna Kathas and then after full realization preach the transcendental message to everyone in all parts of the world. That will bring the desired peace and prosperity of the stricken world. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuro Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachade Satanine Jai Shri Krishna Jaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasati Gaura Bhaktavinda Vanchakandrupa Trivastra Kipa Sindhu Bhyevacha Vatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
So I request the blessings from all the devotees. Hopefully I can say something of benefit to everyone and also something that I can realize myself. So this is Suta Goswami. He's actually speaking to Shonak Rishi and all the sages amongst them. And he's relating the pastimes at the end of the battle of Kurukshetra to him. So it's interesting, like when we think of the Srimad Bhagavatam, often we think like the whole Bhagavatam is going to be contained with nectar about Krishna and his activities. Often we say that. But actually, when you dissect it, Krishna in his Shamsunda form and his two-arm form, when he relates to the devotees in Vrindavan and Kurukshetra, and throughout his time on this earth, there's only actually a few areas of the Bhagavatam which directly describe these pastimes. So later on in the Bhagavatam, there's the 10th canto, the 11th canto, where he speaks to Uddhava. And this is the start of where it starts describing his relationship, his intimate dealings with many of the Pandavas, the five brothers, Kunti in the next, Queen Kunti in the next chapter. It talks about her divine prayers. Later on, then we hear about Bhishma, how he passes away, the instructions he gives to Yudhisthira Maharaj. So this is the section where he's talking about actually Krishna as Bhaktavatsal, where he talks about him being the protector, the well-wisher, the maintainer of his devotees. And it's interesting, like, once I remember when I was coming back from one marathon, I think it was a year or two ago, and someone came up to me and said, you know, you're so lucky that you're just always amongst devotees. Like, you're in Vaikuntha, in the temple. So then I said to him, yeah, definitely it can be like Vaikuntha. But sometimes Kurukshetra does break out and a few Brahmarashtras are thrown at you, you know. And then I was explaining to him that actually when you look at Krishna's life, then actually you'll see at every point in his life, there's always either a fight going on, someone's getting killed, there's either a fight, always building up towards that. So you see when he's young, there's like Putna, Trinavata, so many of these demons at a very young age, when he's just months old, he starts killing them. Then later on, when he's a bit more youthful, then there's the Keshi demon, Vyomasura, Kamsa, he even kills at that a little bit older age. Then when he gets even older than that, then there's like Shishupal, a few other demons there. And then later on, then there's the whole battle of the whole Kurukshetra war. And then even when he's passing, when he's leaving the planet, then he creates another war between the whole Yadu dynasty. So often we think that by bringing Krishna into our life, everything will be peaceful. That everything will be smooth, everything will go okay. But even his direct associates were put through many tribulations. But the point being that Krishna always looked out for them. He always protected them. He always, even in this chapter, we'll see how directly actually Krishna is getting involved within their situations. He's helping them. So in this situation, this is when the whole battle has basically all the Kaurava brothers have been killed except from Duryodhan. So there's just a handful of the Pandavas and also a handful of the Kauravas that are still remaining. And then at that point, they all actually flee from the battlefield. They go towards one of the lakes close by, and Duryodhan himself actually hid himself within the lake, is described. That at one point, he was so scared that, you know, the Pandavas are still looking for him. And it said that Yudhisthira, he sent all of his remaining men out to go and find these few Kauravas that were left. So as they were looking, then they realized there's a lake where they spotted a few of them. And then straight away, the Kauravas, they realized, okay, they're on their way. So let us now, you know, let us disperse, let us go away, let us hide ourselves. And so at that point, Ashwatthama, Kripacharya, and there was one other, Kritavarma, I think. They all ran away. And Duryodhan, he just sank into the bottom of the lake. And with his mystic potency, it said that he made the lake look completely still. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gonitai ki. So he said by his mystic potency, he actually made the whole lake completely still. And so when Yudhisthira saw this, immediately he knew. Immediately he knew that, okay, that he's within here. Okay, he's a coward now. So it's interesting when we actually backtrack and we look at Duryodhan, his life and his lineage, who he's come from. We see that Dhritarashtra, his father, how was he actually born? He was an unwanted child. His mother couldn't even bear the thought of having this child. Therefore, when the conception was happening, she had her eyes closed. Therefore, he came out blind, along with many other reasons. But he was unwanted. He was undesired. And when something like that comes into being, then so many other bad omens and factors come into being. And therefore, when Duryodhan was born, it said that he was born out of envy. That Gandhari, she couldn't bear that. Oh my God, look, Kunti. She's given birth. I'm here. I've been here for months and months and months. She's just given birth. Like, what's going on? So then out of frustration, she starts beating her stomach. And then the first son that's born of that flesh is Duryodhana. And as soon as he's born, then Vidura comes on the scene. And straight away, Vidura, he doesn't say, you know, give him up to foster care, give him, like, abandon him, put him here, put him there. He says, kill him. Kill him. And the reason that he's saying kill him is actually, he's saying, if you kill him now, then the rest of your dynasty, the rest of the Kaurava dynasty will be saved. If you don't, then it's not just your sons. It's not just your pride that's going to be shattered. It's going to be the whole dynasty. The whole dynasty is going to go to wreck. And so now we're at this section where we're seeing, we've seen many instances in the Mahabharata where it talks about Duryodhana, his character. And we can see, because he was born of envy, any situation he was put in, he was envious. At the end of the 10th canto, it describes the Rajasuya sacrifice that that Yudhishthira Maharaj does. And then Krishna quite humorously, he puts Duryodhana as the person receiving all the gifts. So the Kauravas, when they came, it's described that actually they thought, okay, let me offer my service. Let's you know, act like we're neutral to these to the Pandavas. So we'll come, we'll offer our services, but we're not going to give them a gift. We're not going to honor them that much. So then Krishna thought, okay, let's play a trick on him. He can receive all the gifts. And so after this whole Rajasuya sacrifice and the invitation comes, then Duryodhana is relating this all to his father, saying, I'm going mad. I'm going completely crazy because I'm receiving all these gifts. I'm seeing how much people are honoring these individuals. And all the time there's a conch shell being blown, which is basically signifying that hundreds, if not thousands, of people are being fed. And he said, at no point was I not hearing that conch shell. And this just raised the envy within him even more. And so in this particular verse, just before this happens, as we were saying, he was lying deep within this this lake. And then through his mystic powers, he made it still. But then Yudhishthira Maharaj was hurling insult after insult after insult at him, calling him a coward, calling him, you know, you've just let 99 of your brothers just die like that for your sake. And so just like envy in any situation, it can't stay still. It has to surface. So then at one point, Duryodhana, he can't bear it anymore. And he comes up through the lake. They see the ripples coming. They see that he's emerging. And then straight away, they start speaking about the battle. Okay, now you battle us. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, once again, he gives a bit of a gamble. And he says to him, you can pick any one of us, whoever you want to battle, whatever weapon you want to go with. And if you win against one of us, then you get the whole kingdom. So it's a whole twist on the whole battle that's going on again. If you win against one of us, and even Krishna, Krishna then goes up to him and says, you just say, you know, are you sure about this? You've done this before, you know, you don't need to do it again. But then Bhima, he stands in because he's the one that fights with the mace, and Duryodhana's got his mace by him. He's eager to fight with his mace. So then he says, don't worry. That rage of what he's done to Draupadi is within me right now. I'm not going to lose this battle. So it's interesting when you see why this whole episode happens, why specifically that Bhima had to hit his thigh. So he said that there's three main reasons why he had to do this. Yeah. So one was originally when Draupadi was getting disrobed, she was getting pulled, and then Duryodhana, when she was in the assembly, then he took off a piece of his dhoti, and then he started slapping to her, come and sit here. Before that, Karna called her a prostitute. So many, many bad things were going on. So then at that time, Bhima, he was outraged. He couldn't do anything in the assembly. But out of complete rage, he then shouted and vowed that I will break your thigh. I will crush it in this battle. Mark my word. That was his promise. But his idea wasn't that I'm gonna kill him in this way, because that's in the dhanu raid in these rules and regulations, that's not the way that they would kill someone. They would, his plan was that I would kill him fairly in the battle, and then after that I would break his thigh. Because they weren't allowed to hit below the waist or anything like that. The second reason, another reason was, which signifies something very deep for all of us as well, is that Duryodhan, because of his envy, because of his inability to actually please or serve anyone else except from himself, then whenever he came into counsel of anyone that was saying anything beneficial, immediately he thought how to shut this person down. Immediately he switched off from that individual. So after this whole incident with Draupadi happened, then when the Pandavas, when they were in the forest, then Dhritarashtra goes up to Vyasadeva and says to him, you know, you've enlightened me, you've given me all the knowledge about the Vedas, about all this knowledge. Now I wish that you would give this to my son, to Duryodhan. So Vyasadeva said, look, don't worry, there's a great Muni that's coming, Maitreya Muni. He's in the forest right now, he's meeting the Pandavas, he's coming out, he can enlighten your son, don't worry, just approach him. So when he came out, then Dhritarashtra, in a very welcoming, very nice way, he actually went up to him. He washed his feet, he welcomed him, said pleasing words. And then he said to him, can you enlighten my son? And then straight away from the get-go, then Maitreya Muni, he says to his to Duryodhan, he says, don't fight against these Pandavas. He goes, if you want to know what's good for you, if you want to save the Kaurava side, make peace with them. Don't fight against them. Because they are great warriors. They are immensely powerful and they've taken down so many massive demons during their exile time. He said, don't fight with these individuals. And then Duryodhan at that point, he had his head down, he was shaking, he was smiling, a bit kind of like humorous, and he started just slapping his thigh again. And then Maitreya Muni said, if you do not take this serious, then in the war, your thigh will be broken and you will curse the whole destruction of the dynasty of the Kuru dynasty. So again, he was cursed. And then Dhritarashtra was also fearful that, oh my God, look, another curse has come to my son. But then Maitreya Muni, he said, if he does follow what I've said and makes peace with them, this curse won't come true. But if he then fights them, this curse will come true. And then the last part is where quite humorous when Duryodhan, late at night, I think it's the night after Jayadrath, he's then been killed by Arjuna. So then at one point, Duryodhan in the evening, he's pacing up and down thinking, what should I do? You know, maybe I will die the next day. Maybe the whole battle will be over. And then at that point, it said that Gandhari, she says, please come and see me, take all your clothes off, and any mystic potency that I have, I will bestow upon you. And you will be invincible in battle. Then no one can hurt you, no one can touch you. You'll have an invincible shield on you that if anyone strikes you, you won't feel any pain. And then, as we know, he's going at midnight, he's going to see his mother, he's naked. And then who sees him? Krishna. And he's thinking, out of everyone that's here, why did Krishna have to turn up? Like, aren't the Pandavas pleased that they've just killed Jayadrath? Why does he have to be here out of everyone? So then Krishna starts like laughing at him and saying like, come on man, you're a grown man. Like, why are you walking around naked in the evening? So then, then Duryodhan says, no, actually, I'm going to see my mother. It's nothing like that. And then he says, you're going to see your mother like this, like in the middle of the night, and you have no clothes on, at least put a gumshoe on, put something on at least. So then Duryodhan, he puts the gumshoe on, he goes to see his mother, and at that time he forgets to take it off, because he's so embarrassed and a bit ashamed. So then at that time when Gandhari, she takes her fold off, then she glances at his whole body, but then she can't see anything because the gumshoe's there, so she misses out the thigh part. So then Gandhari automatically, she knows actually that, okay, he's seen Krishna. He had to turn up and he had to ruin this whole invincible shield that she was given. So you can see that from the get-go, actually, Duryodhana, in all parts of the Mahabharata, he's actually acting very unfairly. He's always ready to do unlawful things. He's always doing some form of cheating. And this aspect of envy in his behavior spills over so much that whenever anyone was trying to give him any good advice, he couldn't take it. And it spilled over so much that he couldn't be himself in front of people. He was putting a complete facade on in front of individuals that he was in front of. In the Gita at the start, we hear how he's bigging up his side to his warriors. He's saying that we have the immeasurable strength of Bhishma. And the dual meaning is also saying to Dronacharya that actually your strength is insignificant. So, bring it up, fight properly. And then a few verses later, then we hear that the reality after the conch shells are broken. But then it's saying, Ridayani, I had it a minute ago. Anyway, it says that the hearts of the sons of Dhritarashtra have all been shattered. That through the conch shells blown by the Pandava's side, that these hearts were completely shattered. So he was in a hopeless situation. However, he could not let that out to anyone. He did not share that with anyone. He couldn't take counsel from anyone. He couldn't reveal himself to anyone. Whereas the Pandavas, they were always being guided by Krishna. They were always searching for his divine intervention. And therefore, for devotees, this is something that's very significant, actually. Because, as we know, one of the key loving exchanges is that we reveal our mind, is that we actually take guidance. And he said, without this, then someone is stuck in ignorance. Without this, we create a barrier for ourselves. So he's explained that when everything is annihilated by time, the body is annihilated by time, a building is annihilated by time, the universe, all 14 planetary systems is annihilated by time. But two things don't get annihilated. One is ignorance, and one is the false ego. The only way that these two things actually get destroyed, get taken away, is actually by Vaishnav Kripa, by the mercy of the devotees. And without that, we see that inevitably, many people have difficult situations, many people have painful situations, many people can't bear the situation. Duryodhana, he couldn't bear the situation, but he couldn't say that to anyone because he thought it was a sign of weakness. That if someone else counsels me, then it's a sign of weakness. That I'm subservient to someone. No, I have the most information. I have the most knowledge. I'm the one that's going to protect everyone. Therefore, I have to arouse my soldiers. But really, inside of him, he didn't care. Really, inside of him, he didn't care anything that his 99 brothers had died, that anyone else had died. As long as they die and I'm alive, then it's okay. Then it's okay. But now he's on the verge of his death in this verse as we're hearing. But he couldn't let this out to anyone. And therefore, he was trying to permanently make his residence as the material world is a good place, it is a nice place, and I should be the proprietor of this. People should worship me. At one point, one group came up to Srila Prabhupada, and they said to him, great Swamiji, we are inaugurating a new movement. We are inaugurating a new movement. And Prabhupada said, oh, what is it about then? And they said, we would like you to come because we're inaugurating this movement that this material world is a good place to be in. Then Prabhupada said to them, this is like going into a toilet, putting agarbatti, the incense stick on, and saying, wow, this is a nice place to stay in. So then they were like a bit shocked. They're like, okay. And then he said, so when is the inauguration? And they said, no, don't worry. We'll take care of all of that stuff. Maybe you shouldn't speak there. But inevitably, this material world is full of pain. It's full of difficulties. That's just the way that the world is. It's full of duality. But actually, only through the Vaishnavas, their mercy, only through their guidance, can we actually get anywhere in this world. Only through their potency do we actually break through these layers of ignorance, of false ego, and are able to actually serve the devotees. And therefore, at one point, another time when Srila Prabhupada, in the early days, he was giving some lectures, and Brahmananda Prabhu, he said to him, okay, Prabhupada, I'm actually working outside. Should I give that up, and should I join? Should I join here? So then Srila Prabhupada said to him, no, you can carry on working, that's okay, and you can give some of your fruits to Krishna. So then the next time, when Brahmananda Prabhu, he got his paycheck, then he went up to Srila Prabhupada and he said, look, this is, you know, I've been paid, I want to give my fruits to Krishna. So how do I do that? How do I give my fruits to him? And Prabhupada said, you give it to me, and I'll give it to him. Don't worry. So he's saying that we serve him, we give it to him, and then he'll link it back to Krishna. So yeah, this was something that no matter what happened to Duryodhana, he couldn't do this. He couldn't even see that Krishna was amazing when he showed him his universal form. He just thought, wow, this, you know, some magical thing, some mystical guy, you know, it's a good trick. But he didn't see him as a divine personality at all. And therefore, we see that with Duryodhana, at the end of his life, he's lamenting. It's incredible that such a person who was ready to kill anyone, such a person who had such envy with him, but now he's lying on his deathbed, and then he sees these heads of the Pandava's sons. And then he's lamenting that, why did you do this? This is crossing the limit. This is too much. A person that he himself would cross many limits, now he's actually lamenting that this is too much. And then it said in the Mahabharata that actually, at that point, he's thinking that what will happen to actually the Kuru dynasty? Now there's no one. Now there's no one to take it forward. So now he's worried about the legacy of it. He's thinking, at least these five sons could have done something. At least they could have brought something in the world. They could have ruled the world righteously. And the other side, which I'll just quickly speak on, is the Pandavas, who ultimately were protected by Krishna's guidance. They were open to his guidance. They were always going to him for guidance. And therefore, it's said that at certain moments, Krishna didn't even say anything to them. He didn't even say words to them. He just glanced at some points. So when Arjuna, when he's saying, Senayo Ubayo Madhye, Ratam Stapaya Mechuta, when he's saying, please, O infallible one, take my chariot in the middle of the two armies. Let me see who is here to fight, who is ready to fight with me. And then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he's explaining that actually Krishna doesn't say anything, but actually he just glances at Arjuna. And this glance is very significant. This glance, just in this one glance, that he's saying to Arjuna that, okay, because you are the son of my father's sister, therefore I am Bhaktavatsal, therefore I will serve you as a charioteer. However, you're a kshatriya, you have certain duties, and I know by doing this act, by taking you in the middle of the two chariots, the two armies, that you're going to completely fail at your duties. So what is even the point of me taking you in front of the enemies? What is the point of that? But anyway, he does it so that he can speak this the Bhagavad Gita to him. Another time is now when Bhima, he's trying to actually kill Duryodhana, and then he can't kill him. He said that at certain times he's smashing him so much that Duryodhana is going flying. He's going completely flying, and then he lands and he doesn't feel any pain because of the shield that he has. And therefore it said that Krishna, in some version it says that Krishna stares at Duryodhana's thighs, and Bhima catches glimpse of this, knowing that that's where to hit. And other versions it says that when Krishna's looking at the thighs, then Arjuna sees this, and then he points it out to Bhima then. And then he knows, okay, this is how it's going to go down. This is fulfilling my vow, it's fulfilling the Rishi's curse on him. And Krishna is ultimately authorizing it. And another time is at the end of this chapter, when we see that Ashwatthama has been caught by Arjuna. And at that point, many of the Pandavas, Bhima, even Krishna at one point, is saying, kill him! Kill him! You have said to Draupadi that you will kill him, you will take his head off. And then Arjuna himself is confused. Should I kill him? What should I do? And then Draupadi, only her love, only her motherly affection could stop this. When there's so much going on in the world, when there's so much chaos, so much ego going on in the world, and someone's so confused, the only thing that can save them at that point is motherly love, actually, he said. So at that point, Draupadi says, no, I can actually feel the pain of being separated from my sons. My sons are dead. I don't wish this upon any mother. And therefore, she stops the whole thing. And then by Krishna kind of, in a humorous way, saying, yeah, just do what you want, Arjuna. So he doesn't clarify it. But then he looks at the jewel that he has on his head. And then Arjuna realizes, okay, let me cut this off. And then straight away from that, all his potency goes, his body shrivels up, he goes smaller, and he gives this jewel which was promised to Draupadi, that she wanted this jewel. So there's so many ways that Krishna is actually glancing upon us. And at the end of this purport, Prabhupada is explaining that Lord Chaitanya desired for everyone to actually come in contact with this Krishna Katha. At first, he wants everyone to fully understand it, fully realize it, and then preach it. So somehow, also, we've come in contact with this. We can see Krishna's glance in many ways. We can see his hand in our life in many ways. And to some great fortune, we somehow come in contact with the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is also Krishna's direct contact with us. And therefore, somehow we have to figure out a way of letting go of this Duryodhana-like mentality, letting go of this separation, this envy, and somehow or another, then latch on to something that will bring us closer and closer to Krishna. In some way or another, I think when I reflect on it, like, is it enough to just sit in a Bhagavatam class? Is it enough to just meet devotees? Is it enough to just eat prasadam? And maybe obviously it does have a great effect. But I think a deeper reflection that we all should actually have or be thinking is actually, how am I going to be engaging my senses? Do I really want to turn out like Duryodhana on my deathbed regretting things? Thinking like, oh my God, things should have been different. That so many bad omens came. Or do I actually want to think every moment I can see Krishna's glance, at every moment I can see the options that Krishna is presenting to me so that I can get closer to him. And then we have a very divine life. Then we have a very perfect life where we can always be interacting with Krishna. So anyway, those were just a few thoughts. It wasn't anything that I actually wrote down, so a bit different. But anyway, so yeah, thank you for listening. If there are any corrections or contributions anyone has, feel free to ask.